ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled, oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, it was a good weekend, I suppose, insofar as Ireland got the result they needed over Scotland. The other two games we'll come on to later in the podcast, but they certainly lacked the desired quality you'd hope to expect from Six Nations weekend. But we'll start with Murrayfield. Ireland beating Scotland 3-1. And, you know, I just thought Ireland were full value for the victory. But, you know, they will feel that they probably left a bonus point behind them.
I'd say so. You know, at the end there, I thought that Ireland had enough about them to maybe have a look at getting a bonus point. But it was just one of those games where a lot of the free-flowing stuff that they might have expected didn't really come to pass. They will think, I think they will look and go, geez, maybe we left a bonus point behind us out there. But, you know, I think they'll be fairly pleased with how they played. There was no fireworks, you know, but one or two little incidents. But like I said, there was no, it wasn't a heroic return for Ireland after the England game where they, you know, avenged the loss by, you know, taking it out on Scotland. Not really, didn't play out like that. But I think there was satisfying enough things about that win for them to be happy. Elements to work on, for sure. But I think they'll be more happy than certainly they were after England. But there's room to go yet, I'd say.
Tom, an element of fortune, obviously, about the Conor Murray first try with that bounce. The Stockdale try, just a superb set piece. And you know, the Joey Carberry break then with Keith Earls on the end of it. Look, the bounce of the ball for the first try, fair enough. But talk us through the mechanics of that set piece move for the Stockdale try. You know, I mean, Ireland, when Ireland gets set piece right and gets moves off set piece and they click, there's nothing better than watching a really well executed set piece move.
Oh yeah, look, I think Ireland and Joe Schmidt in particular is and are one of the best sides and people in the world in this game at developing effective set pieces. There's so many moving parts. You have to look at the way that Ireland would have looked to attack Scotland. Now, I wrote before the game about that Ireland would look to attack off a five-man line-out. Reason being is, and they did in this instance, the reason being is Scotland, if you look at their defensive efforts and the way that they structure their defence against big teams, like Ireland would be a physically quite a big team in the forwards. Midfield was very big as well. They double up on tackles and they double up on running lines. So the likes of Bundy Aki, Chris Farrell, and you know, guys like that appearing in and around midfield is going to cause stress for Scotland. Now, Scotland like to get their back row of Wilson and McAnally, their hooker, who's very mobile as well. They like to get these guys up and moving off the tail of the lineout. Joe Schmidt would have seen this last week, or whenever it was he was looking at Scotland, and he would have seen that there's an opportunity there on five-man lineouts. Because when you have a five-man lineout, one forward generally will go into midfield. Now, Ireland, in this instance, kept Sean O'Brien a good distance away from the lineout. He looked like he was kind of in a heavy receiver thing. Sometimes you'll see an open side, like Chris Clutie does it for Munster, where they'll stand at the back of the lineout. The ball will come down. They'll go in at the back of them all and they look to break off. Now, Sean O'Brien, in this instance, was a good bit away, and Conor Murray was standing at the front of the lineout. Now, when they slid away from the lineout, Sean O'Brien, in his position, was there to draw the attention of McInally and Wilson, and maybe Richie as well, to get them moving forward. Now, when they moved forward to try and basically do a number on O'Brien, you know, try and catch him behind the gain line, hurt him, maybe turn him over. When they went at him like that, when Sean O'Brien passed it on, shipped it on to Johnny Sexton, at that point, Ireland were in, that was the first phase of it out of the way. Because once those mobile back row players were, after shooting up, they shot beyond the lineup. Once they came up into that position, they were where Joe Schmidt would have wanted them. He would have wanted them in that instance to be having to run back to get behind the gain line, you know, to get into a defensive line. So when Sexton did a bit of movement, you could see Bundy Aki as well. He shifted his line across Chris Farrell enough to bring Strauss and I'm not sure who the other pair was. I'm not sure, was it Sam Johnson or somebody else? To bring them out and sit them down. So they basically were standing still while Chris Farrell was running at full pelt and basically to get him over the gain line. And once Chris Farrell got over the gain line, Ireland were ready for the second phase of this strike move. Once they got over there, the back row of Scotland and the front row were all having to come around and get back, you know, basically move further to get, you know, into the defensive line to get behind the ruck point so they weren't offside. Once that came in, Ireland were able to hit Peter O'Mahony, who was coming along very, very vocal, looking to attack the open side of that ruck. Now, Scotland, they like to put themselves in and cluster up on defence. They started to do it again. Bundy Aki was over there as well, running a very hard line, narrowing them up. That drew Richie, who came around the side of the ruck. It drew him over out of the way. That exposed Alan Dell, who was a forward, who was lifting, I think, at the, I think it was at the front of the lineup, but he's pretty pacey as well for a prop. He got around to the ruck point from Chris Farrell's carry, and then he was exposed by the side of the ruck, which is pretty much what Ireland would have expected. They weren't expecting Alan Dell, they were expecting a tight five forward to be there. And once Richie drifted over to double up on Aki and Peter O'Mahony, once Peter O'Mahony shipped that ball back to Johnny Sexton, and remember, Jacob Stockdale was hiding himself here the whole time, trying to look bored, disinterested, like he wasn't involved in the play, hiding behind the ruck in some ways. He ran on at pace. Sexton went right to the gain line, drew out Alan Dell, and put Jacob Stockdale through a hole. And from there, look, very hard to stop Jacob Stockdale from that distance once he's made that break at pace. He powered right through. Fantastic score for Ireland. And it was one of those multi-part plays. Like there was bits going on the ruck with Tadhg Furlong moving fellas out of the way, bits with Rory Best standing at the back of the lineout and kind of blundering across so fellas would have to run around him or bump into him. It was just such a well-designed lineout scheme, and when you have guys or when you have a set play that works like that and puts fellas in, look, it was 7 points. So it's like when you can work it, and 7 points in Test rugby is never to be sniffed at. That's an outstanding bit of play from Joe Schmidt and an outstanding technical achievement from the Irish players, who were able to get so much movement and precision and, you know, accuracy into that, you know, basically around 30 seconds of action. It really is something very special, and I thought it was an excellent bit of work.
Yeah, of course, Tom, the more movement you put into these kind of schemes and patterns, the more movement, the harder it is to read. But also, the more movement, the more moving parts, the more likelihood of there being a screw up. But you know, with all the moving parts, it just was it was like clockwork. Tom, Ireland did cough up a bit of that lead, 12-10 going in at the break. We saw Scotland having a real kind of shot at the Irish line in the dying minutes and seconds of the first half as well. That intercept try, when Joey Carberry came on, look, yeah, intercept tries are just one of those things. I'm sure that Joe Schmidt will be trying to maybe get him to reduce the high percentage or the riskier plays or the riskier passes that he sometimes throws.
If you throw an intercept pass, you have to take responsibility for it. And Ireland, up until the very last ruck before that ball left had a knock-on advantage that was called over right before by Romain Poit. And, you know, it's one of those things. I think Joe Schmidt called it in the aftermath. Look, it's one you just can't get caught out with that. You know, you have to be aware of your surroundings. The pass he threw, neither Healy or Best were going for it, so I'm not sure. It was just a real miscommunication. And when you get picked off like that, you have to take your medicine. It was a poor bit of play from him, poor moment. But I think it showed a lot about him that he managed to come back and actually, you know, make up for it. Because like that's a real bad start. He was on the field around 5 minutes at that stage. To throw an intercept pass that leads directly to a try. God, look, it's one of those ones where you're kind of tearing your hair out. Like, and for him to come back from that then shows a lot of mental durability.
Tom, he's the kind of player that doesn't seem to let a setback bother him. You know, he just seems to be, you know, nonplussed, just unflustered, really, no matter in what kind of situation he's in. And I suppose, look, we saw in the second half, we saw the real maverick, I suppose, element that Carberry has when he managed to squeeze through those two tacklers and get through a gap which he had no right to get through. But, you know, that's all very well and good. But when you get into the position that he found himself in, that pass to Keith Earls, that kind of, you know, 15 to 20 metre floating pass right into the arms of the onrushing Keith Earls, so easy to throw that pass and let it drift forward. And, you know, like I was saying to you off air, when Carberry breaches the defensive line like that, any runner that comes within 15 to 20 metres of him on either side, you know, is within range for that pass and that wonderful rangy pass that he has off both hands. You know, when he gets in behind the defensive, when he breaks the gain line like that, it really makes it so easy for the runners to get on the end of scores. He's a joy to watch when he gets into those positions.
Because his skill set's so good, you know? Like, I know he's very young yet, but like his ability to kick off both feet, to pass so well off both sides. I mean, we've seen excellent passes from him now off both sides. Like you said there, great range, great pace. Like, not a hint of forward about that pass either. And floated it too. Man, look, he's just a very good player. His running is so balanced. He's got such pace. His breaking is unbelievably good. Look, he's a talented player. And like I said, look, I think when you're looking at him, he's still so young and he's still developing as a player. God, it's kind of, when you look at it, you go, God, how good can this guy be? Like, you know, he's got it all in it to a certain extent. Now, we've got to see, can he manage a game under big pressure, you know? And I think that this game wasn't really that kind of game. I mean, he's 23 years of age. So it's like, you know, geez, if I was looking at him, I'd be kind of going, he can be an extremely special player. And I think he's got the ability that you look for if you want a talented 10. You know, a guy who you can build a team around. What's his goal kicking like? He hasn't missed a kick since, geez, when? Like, since Cast? You know, the away game in Cast, he hasn't missed a kick since then. His running ability is outstanding. His passing is very good. It comes down now to accumulating experience and knowing when to do certain things. But he's such a talented player.
We know he's a talented player, and we also know that he's going to be wearing a red shirt for Munster when he comes back from the Irish break and from the Irish Six Nations campaign. And you know that gives me plenty of optimism for Munster going forward as well. It's just look, and what I love about when he gets into those attacking positions is the calmness. He doesn't panic. He's able to assess who's around him and what's around him and where they are, and he just looks like he's in a training session. He almost looks as if he slows the game down when he gets into those positions. And look, I just think he's a Rolls Royce of a player. Munster lucky to have him. And I can't wait to see, to see him when he gets back in. I would expect him to start against Italy, Tom, in the next game. I think he deserves an 80-minute crack against the Italians. We know that they, you know, from what we've seen of them, the evidence so far, they're a really, really poor side. And I'd expect Ireland to go to Rome fully expecting the 5 points.
Oh, yeah, I'd say so. Like, I think Ireland are going to be, you know, they'll definitely send over a rotated side over to Italy. I think whatever side they send over will probably win and, like, win with a bonus point. I'd like to see Carberry getting a full start there. You know, Italy, Ireland should win there, but whether or not, you know, it'll be up to him to, suppose, to manage that game from the start. And if he can, and you know, play with the sort of the confidence and the accuracy that he showed as he grew into the game on Saturday, you know, it'll be just another hugely encouraging moment for him, and, you know, another step on his road to kind of usurping Johnny Sexton for that Irish shirt. You know, whether it's not a given, you know, another challenger could come from somewhere, but he's the guy in that box seat at the moment to challenge for that jersey, and he's not happy with number 22. He'll want that 10 shirt, and because he's that player now where he's, I'd say he's after getting used to those starts down in Munster. He's after getting used to being the, you know, being the fella who everybody looks to in Munster at the big games. And when you're used to that at your province, you want that at national level as well. And that's the kind of competition that you want with fellas, you know, going after each other and killing each other for that jersey. Like, and I think that's where Joey Carberry sees himself going forward, as in, I'm not happy being number 22. I want to be wearing number 10.
Tom, the current situation with the Six Nations at the moment, I suppose Ireland with just the 4 points after the two games, you know, England looking absolutely superb with a maximum 10 from 10 points haul. It's unlikely that England will drop the requisite amount of points for Ireland to catch them in this race. I suppose, what for Ireland is, you know, if Ireland win out the rest of their Six Nations campaign, is that a success? Where, I suppose, how do we gauge success for Ireland in the remainder of this campaign?
Well, look, I think, you know, for Ireland, we won a Grand Slam last year, and I think had Ireland not won a Grand Slam over the course of the last 4 year cycle, we might be focusing a little bit more on the Six Nations this year. Not that we're not focusing on it, but I think once you're beaten by England to a certain extent, you know the slam is gone. Now, I think Ireland will want to, of course, look to win every game they play for the rest of the Six Nations. You don't go out there to lose. But I think that Ireland will be, you know, I think we may see a few combinations, and I think we might see a few experiments with regards to selection that we might not have seen normally had we not won this, you know, the Grand Slam last year. I think we'll see a fair bit of, guys slotting in to see, can they play in my system? Can I slot a guy in here into the second row? Like Ty Byrne, for example, hopefully now he's fit and ready for this game against Italy. Can we slot him in, and can he do a job for us there? Because Quinn Roo slotted in Scotland and did a pretty good job calling the line out, you know, being very physical around the field. Can Ty Byrne slot in for us there and do a job in the second row? Can he do the job we want him to do, which is different? Anybody can come in there and do a job, you know, be it a medium job, average job, bad job, whatever. But can he come in and play the way that we need him to play in our system? And, you know, and it basically apply that to everybody else. Can we get Conway in here? Can he do something for us? Can we get Will Addison playing in here? What about Stuart McCluskey? Can these fellas come in and give us an option? I think we might see stuff like that as we go. We won't see wholesale changes, but I think we'll see guys coming in who may not have normally got an opportunity and, you know, basically see, look, can we get you in here? Can you operate alongside the top guys and go from there? I'd like to think that, you know, we won't be sticking with the rigid selection going forward. You know, we're going to see the stalwarts there for sure, but we might see a few different names in there, just seeing what can they do coming up against into the, you're looking to win every game, so you won't see wholesale changes bar against Italy. But can we get guys in there who can do a job for us? Because if we start dropping fellas coming up in the World Cup like we did last year, or, you know, 2015, we will need to know, hey, look, can we get fellas in there who can perform, and we know that can perform to a very high level because we've seen them do it. I think we might see a little bit of that over the course of the next couple of rounds of the Six Nations. Obviously, because there's no point bringing guys into a team to lose. We won't see widespread changes, but I think we will see a few guys coming in to see, how are you going to do, especially with the injuries, you know, how can you perform? How can you go at this? So we'll see who comes in and how they do. But I think Ireland, with the Six Nations or the Grand Slam in the bag last year, won't be feeling too much pressure. I think England are kind of the hot favourites for this now. I'd expect them to beat Wales as well in the Principality next time around. And once they do that, it's pretty much home and hose for them. So we'll see how they go. But I think from Ireland's perspective, build. World Cup's coming. So I think that's the big target for this group.
Yeah, look, I think beat Italy away, blood some players in that. France at home, then again, we should be good enough to beat them. And, you know, let's go into the final round against Wales, hopefully looking to spoil their party or to, you know, to enjoy the challenges that come with going to Cardiff to take on Warren Gatland's side. So I think, look, plenty to look forward to from the Irish point of view, looking ahead to the remainder of the competition. Tom, moving on to Wales and Italy in Rome. And it was a terribly poor game of rugby. I thought Wales, despite the fact that they had, you know, named so many changed players in this competition. I think I heard O'Gara saying that Wales are looking for wins. They're not worried about bonus points. That they want to do is, you know, they're looking to win the competition via the slam route, and that they're basically putting all their eggs into the basket for the arrival of England in Cardiff in 2 weeks' time. You know, and if that's okay, be it as that may, but you're kind of leaving yourself no chance of winning the competition if you know you're not going to overtake them on points if you don't pick up the bonus point against Italy. I just thought it was showed a lack of ambition and a lack of quality from Wales at times. Like, Italy were terrible, but I just thought Wales definitely left a bonus point slip on Saturday evening.
Oh, they did. You know, I think that Wales were probably right to get, because they're missing a few guys who were important to them, Faletau, a few others. You know, I think Wales were probably right to rest those fellas. But the game itself suffered for it, I think. Wales were very disjointed. Italy were fierce. Again, look, they are improving. They are getting better. But I just think that it's just not really working for them on the field. As in, conditioning doesn't really look it. As in, they look like they're still falling away towards the end of the second half, or, you know, the end of the third quarter, really. And it's so difficult when you're in that situation to be able to, to compete against very good teams. Even a Welsh side who were down a few fellas, you know. That's a game, I think, where Italy would have been kind of going, geez, we'll have a real crack off this. But there's so many little technical errors that they have in the game that, you know, with the game that they play. Lads running bad lines, their depth isn't right. Even the way that they kind of structure how they go to rucks and stuff like that, it just, they're not where they need to be at test level. I mean, Benetton have been great. Zebra have been much improved as well in the Pro 14, but the step up is big, and I think that they still have a fair bit to go, you know, with regards to getting fellas in. Look, they have key injuries too. I think if you put in the likes of Negri in there, the guy from Gloucester, whose name completely escapes me right now, Jake Pelledri, and a few other guys, then maybe they're a bit more, competitive, but. Geez, look, I thought they were poor, the game was poor, and it just was just a bit of a bad buzz around it towards the end. You know, it just seemed like Wales kind of pulling away a bit at the end. Italy just, again, just not at the races.
Yeah, the Italians most certainly not at the races. The race on Sunday between France and England, another non-event really, Tom. France, I don't think I've ever seen as disorganized, as disinterested, as shambolic a performance as France. It was just, from start to finish, they just look headless. You know, headless in defense, clueless in attack. It was really, really, really hard to see or to take any positives from that French performance. And I know we sit here year in, year out saying the same things about French rugby, you know, that their conditioning doesn't look as good as the other nations, that their, you know, their attention to detail when it comes to their fitness, and, you know, that the structure that they tend not, you know, they don't seem to have the same processes or structures that the likes of an Ireland or England have. You know, continuity, you know, the players don't seem to know what the player inside them or outside them is doing. It just, it it just stinks from top to bottom, Tom. And, you know, as somebody who, I suppose, myself and yourself, who would have grown up watching French rugby in the, you know, with the likes of, Entomac, Galtier, all these, Saint-André, all these real fluent attack-minded players. It's really hard to see where French rugby is going to go from here. They've been terrible, and not just recently. It's been like that way for a long time now.
France were an embarrassment on Sunday. They just were. It's the kind of performance that is deeply disappointing for somebody like yourself there. I'm a big fan of French rugby, have been for God, like they were a team who you wanted to be growing up looking at the Six Nations or the Five Nations as it was then. They were the benchmark, they were the standard, everybody wanted to be them. But my God, they were so poor on Sunday. They were so bad. Like, and not just bad as in any team can go out there and play poorly, but lads were jogging after balls going being kicked through. Lads were looking disinterested, like they couldn't be arsed being there. You know, you have certain fellas as well who are like, they just looked like they had no spirit, you know? And like, as in, that's something that you would take for granted. But worst of all, they looked like they were barely coached. You had acres of space in the backfield. You nearly build a garage there. Lads weren't covering across the position. It just looked like nobody knew what they were doing. The defensive structure evaporated. Then when they were embarrassed in Twickenham, this is called Le Crunch. This game gets its own name, Le Crunch. And this was just lame embarrassment. Like, this was just depressing to watch. Yeah, fair enough. Sometimes you can watch a team getting beat like that, and this is like, there's a sort of an element of schadenfreude about it. There's an element of, you know, we're watching something significant here. But this just seemed to be a bit of a just the air being let out of it. I was thinking, geez, France will come into this game against England. They'll have something to prove. They've picked a very big team physically. Geez, they're going to have a real cut off these fellas here. Didn't have a cut off, nothing. It was embarrassing. It's just one of those things where you're a French fan looking at that and you're going, Christ, this is piss poor. And it's just one of those ones where I think that performance will stay with a lot of those players for many years. Now, they could well go on a World Cup run, the World Cup in 2019, but I'd be surprised. They don't look it. Like Ireland last time around, we beat them, and we were, I would say, a worse team than what we are now by far, I would say. You know, I think that's the kind of the era of, well, French teams are just going to mutiny and then just decide to play well once it comes to the World Cup or whatever else. I think those days are kind of gone, to be honest. Because if you look at the knockout stage of the World Cup last time around, New Zealand stuck 62 points on them. You know, and it's one thing to say, yeah, we'll perform when it comes to the World Cup, but that's not a guarantee. 2011 was a long time ago, you know, when apparently the likes of Dusatoir and other fellas just basically started coaching the team. That's an eon ago in rugby, the way the game is going. I think France need a foreign coach. I think Jack Brunel isn't up to the job. And look, coaching Test rugby isn't easy. It's an extremely tough, mentally demanding job that is just not everybody is up for it. And I think that France need to get a serious coach in from Southern Hemisphere or wherever else to get them playing with a bit more structure and something a bit more acceptable for the game as it is in 2019, because they cannot have any more games like that at the weekend, like at the weekend. They're like, they're team killers. They're those kind of performances where you come away looking at the fellas in the bus and going, geez, does this fella give a shit? And he's looking at you thinking the same thing. And that's never a good place to be. So, you know, we'll see what happens with French rugby, but that was desperately poor.
Tom, yeah, I know you say a foreign coach, and that's all well and good, but, I mean, these problems run deeper than bringing in a foreign coach. I mean, I know they need an outside influencer. They need, like, we saw the influence that the likes of Joe Schmidt and foreign coaches brought to the Irish provinces and brought to Ireland when they came in here. For France to bring in a foreign coach, it just I don't know if they would even leave a foreign coach there long enough to have the desired effect to bring about the change that needs to happen.
It's hard to know, like, you know, because look, the French teams are still quite competitive in Europe. But again, I just don't know if they can be turned around at this stage. I'm sure you could probably turn them around and get some decent performances out of them or whatever else. But even looking at the pathways, they've got good players. There's good players. But like, as in, geez, like, I don't know if there's much to say for French rugby at the moment, just to say that, yeah, look, we don't know which team is going to show up or whatever else. But like I said, I think it's at the point now where we kind of do know what team is going to show up. And I think that it's not going to be good. You're going to get a big physical game off France, always. But if you've anything about you, and I'm sure France are going to look to, you know, have a response, you know, as per usual against Scotland this time around. But look, I'm not sure how you turn it around. I think at the moment there's just a lot of problems. They need continuity. They're not getting it. They need to have a set core of top players who are going to play for them. And at the moment, you don't know week to week who those core players are for France. Before, you could name it, like you were naming them off there a while ago. For England, you can name them: Meka Vunipola, Owen Farrell, Mara Itoje, what's his name? The likes of Henry Slade now, Manitou Alagi, Elliot Daly. When you look at France, you go, okay, they've got Yuan Huje, but is he fullback or a winger now? I wouldn't say he's a fullback looking at the weekend. But you look then and you go, who's their fly half? Well, it's Cammy Lopez at the moment, but you know, I'm not sure if that's going to stick for the next, you know, two games even. Midfield, they chop and change. Wingers, they chop and change. Forwards are in and they're out. You know, they're trying to blood some new guys in there as well. But it's just very difficult for France. The only bedrock who seems to be there for them is Louis Picamoles. It's just very difficult for France. It's very difficult to see how they can go from here and what they need to do to get back to being regularly competing at the top end. They may well perform against Scotland and beat them out the gate or whatever else. But it's only papering over in the cracks. They've got exactly the recipe to beat Scotland because they're a big, huge team, and Scotland have big trouble against big packs. So, you know, that's just going to continue. But Scotland could well beat them just as easy. You know, there's just no predictability, and I think that's the biggest thing for France. They've got to start getting predictable and start getting, okay, look, we have the ability to be a top five team in the world. The fact that they're not is just a shameful thing for the FFR. Whether they have the wherewithal to change it, geez, who knows? But something needs to change, because I think that France continuing to slide down the rankings is bad for rugby in the Northern Hemisphere.
Moving on to all things provincial, and Munster back in action at the weekend. We'll come to that later on we'll come to that later on in the week as the team announcement is made. But looking ahead to the Southern Kings coming to Cork on Friday night, a match that you're going to be going to. Tom, we heard from Johan van Gran and Bill Johnston and Jeremy Lockman during the week. And I suppose, look, for these guys coming back after a break and coming back refreshed, looking forward to getting back into Pro 14 action. And I, for one, am looking forward to hopefully Munster kicking off their return with a bonus point.
Munster should, yeah. It's a game Munster should win. Southern Kings have a... They have something about them. They're a good team. Like, as in, they're very good on turnover ball. Munster were reiterating that over and over again. They're right. Like, as in, the Southern Kings are a very quick team, very good in transition. But this is a team Munster should be beating at home. I think that it's an opportunity for the young lads in the side to come and make a statement for themselves. It's one thing to go and perform against the Dragons, as Bill Johnston was asked there during that press conference. Was that you who asked that? Basically, look, you plan all week to go and do something in a game, and then it starts to lash rain and horizontal wind, you know, a couple of minutes before kickoff, and all that goes out the window. They should have a fine track to play on this Friday night. I think Munster will look to try and go out there and make a statement. Some young lads want to start making a name for themselves, and you know, that's when you're a young lad, that's what you want to do. You want to go out there and show that you're the man now. And this is an opportunity to start off doing that.
Yeah, it certainly is. Tom, I suppose that kind of wraps up the pod for today. But tell us a little bit about what you're doing this week on Three Red Kings Patreon page.
Well, I've already got an alternative analysis video up looking at Ireland's kicking over the course of the last two Six Nations games. And I'll also be doing a red-eye build-up to the Southern Kings and a podcast looking at all the little details once the team is named. That's on patreon.com/3RedKings for just €2 a month.